The final case for oral argument this morning is National Farmers Union Property and Casualty Company versus Farm City Insurance Company. For the appellant, National Farmers Union, is Roy Wise, an attorney from Aberdeen. And for the appellee, Farm and City Insurance, is Ms. Melissa Neville, an attorney from Aberdeen. Mr. Gosch, I see, is appearing today too. Who will be arguing? Okay, thank you. Mr. Wise, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Court, Counsel. Before I get started, I had a little personal item I wanted to bring to the court's attention. About 20 years ago, I was here arguing a case, and I brought with me to my hometown of Pierre my 9-year-old son, Ryan. And now, 20 years later, I'm back here in front of you with my 29-year-old son and his wife, both of whom live in Pierre. It's just an interesting, to me anyway, turn of events, I wanted to let the court know that. This is a case in which a insurance company that, by all intents and purposes, is a primary insurance carrier, trying to elevate itself to the status of an umbrella insurance carrier. As pointed out in the briefs, the basis for this lawsuit arises out of an accident that happened back in January of 1999. At the time of that accident, Mr. Fredrickson, Dean Fredrickson, was driving a vehicle owned by Larry Lorenzo. Now, it's not in the facts, but just to give you a little more information on the facts, Mr. Fredrickson blew a stop sign and T-boned a car. In that car were six occupants: the driver, front seat passenger who had a two-year-old child in her lap, and in the back seat were three young children. None of them were seat belted. The child that was in the front seat, being held by the front seat passenger, was impelled into the dashboard and sustained a very serious head injury. It crushed the skull of that child. And then the three children that were in the back seat, it was bucket seats. The child that was in the middle was propelled by the impact into the shift knob, and literally his scalp was peeled back. So you had, and then you had the other occupants also making claims for injuries. So he had very serious injuries. They sued Mr. Fredrickson. Now, since Mr. Lorenzen was the owner of the vehicle, his insurance company, National Farmers Union, assumed the defense. Now, National Farmers Union had the primary policy, $500,000 limits per occurrence. And then you had Mr. Fredrickson, who was insured by Farm and City, with the minimal 25-50 coverage. And then you also had Mr. Lorenzen with an umbrella policy issued by National Farmers Union for $1 million. Now, the practicality of the situation was, Mr. Fredrickson being sued, National Farmers Union came in and defended. In the affidavit that I filed in support of our motion for summary judgment, and by the way, this is all on stipulated facts.
So there are no questions that we need to decide other than law.
Exactly.
All right.
But in support of the motion for summary judgment, I submitted an affidavit. And the reason for that affidavit was to show how the events unfolded to get to the settlement. And briefly, what happened was, the lawsuit was filed, we went to non-binding mediation, I gave notice to Farm and City's adjuster, local adjuster, first of all, that we were going to be seeking the recovery, and then gave him notice of the mediation, invited them to attend if they wanted, faxed him the same day as the mediation, told him, you know, we're in mediation, it looks like we're going to get this settled. Just letting you know, if we do settle it, we're coming after you. We settled the case for $735,000. So the $500,000 of National Farmers Union's primary policy, the owner's policy, exhausted the first $500,000 of the $735,000 claim. So you have a $235,000 amount that's in dispute. And what we're asking the courts to decide is who pays the next portion of that $235,000. We contend that because National Farmers Union's umbrella policy is in fact an umbrella policy, under any circumstances of this case, has to be an umbrella policy. It comes last. And that the driver's insurance policy with the 2550 coverage limits should be required to pay its full $50,000. Simply because the extent of the claim was obviously $235,000 for all six occupants, so the $50,000 per occurrence amount would apply. So we want and ask the trial court to do the following priority. The $500,000 National Farmers Union policy, primary. Farm and City, the insurer of the driver, the $50,000 next. And then National Farmers Union's umbrella policy last would pick up the balance of the $185,000. Now, what Farm and City is arguing is because of the policy language in its policy, which, by the way, says we're excess if our insured is not or is involved in an accident of a non-owned vehicle. And so they're claiming that because of that language, they are excess to anybody, including an umbrella carrier. And so they argued to the judge that, in fact, they should come dead last. And because National Farmers Union's umbrella policy was not exhausted, there was then no exposure on Farm and City's behalf.
The umbrella goes to $1 million, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And because $500,000 was paid before, there was only $235,000, they didn't exhaust the $1 million of coverage, therefore they don't have to pay. They cited as authority for that a Utah Supreme Court case. That's one case. We've cited to the trial court the Iowa case that involved Farm and City with this very same policy, in which the Iowa Supreme Court, I mean, that case is almost on all fours with this case.
And that expresses the majority view.
And that is exactly the majority view. The trial court took the in-between and concluded that both policies were trying to be excess, and because both policies were trying to be excess, they were conflicting, and when you can have conflicting policies, you prorate the coverage.
Mr. Weiss, shouldn't individual insurance companies, in defining the risk that they desire to cover and the premium that they're going to charge, shouldn't they be able, absent a statute that prohibits some restriction because of public policy? I mean, they should be able to define their policy any way they want.
Right.
To define the risk and determine the premium, shouldn't they?
And that's kind of what Judge Von Wold said in adopting the conflicting excess claims to then prorate the policies. But I don't think that's a fair analysis. You have to, and this court did it in American Concept versus Underwriters, where you look at the circumstances. And one of the things that they looked at in American Concept, Justice Center, was the amount of premium that was paid. Now, in this case, Mr. Lorenzen paid $211 per year for $1 million of umbrella coverage. Now, contrast that with what Mr. Fredrickson paid Farm and City. He paid Farm and City $432.80 for the minimal 2550 coverage. This is one of the factors.
Is that tied into his driving record, though?
No. Has nothing to do with the driving record.
So he's not considered high risk or anything like that?
Correct.
Should that be a factor?
Why should that be a factor?
Why wouldn't the key factor be the way the language and the policy is expressed?
Exactly. The majority of the courts say you have to recognize the different levels of insurance coverage that is in the market. And the market determines what the premium is that is paid. And if you are a primary insurance carrier, you are the first line of defense. So you have to pick up the cost of defense and whatever the initial claim is. And so as a result of that, they assign then an amount that you're going to pay as a premium for primary coverage. And that's what we cite in our brief. The next tier is what we call an excess policy. And the final tier, which this court also has recognized in other cases, including American Concept, is that we have true excess coverage, which in this case is the umbrella coverage, and is reflected by the amount of the premium that is paid for the amount of coverage that is afforded under an umbrella policy. So what the majority of courts are doing, Justice Sabers, is going beyond the mere language of the policies and looking at other factors to determine what in fact is the true excess policy.
What do we have in our law in South Dakota that would indicate that we should follow that route?
American Concept is the primary case. And American Concept is a situation where a homeowner's insurer was involved in a gun shooting. And they settled the case. And then American Concept, the homeowner's policy, sued the NRA's insurance company because they were claiming that the insured was also covered under the NRA policy. And in this case, the court specifically mentioned the fact and alerted to the fact that there was a difference in the premiums that were paid between the two policies as being a consideration in determining which of the two policies was the true excess policy. And that's where I think Farm and City is trying to blur this. Because you've got to recognize there are different tiers of coverage. And that's why I said at the very beginning, what they're trying to do is elevate a primary insurance policy to the status of an umbrella policy so that you then get the conflicting provisions of the two policies to then ask for the proration. And that's just not accurate in the marketplace, and it's not accurate according to the majority of the courts that have viewed this issue. The majority holds that an umbrella policy is a true excess policy and is last in coverage. And that's what we're saying here. The National Farmers Union policy, the umbrella policy, is the last in coverage, and Farm and City should have to exhaust its $50,000 limit before you get to the balance of the umbrella policy. So, if there are two approaches you can use to that, and the simplest, I think, is to merely recognize the policies for what they are. A primary policy with an other insurance clause and a true umbrella policy. They're not the same policy, so therefore you don't even get to the issue of comparing the language in the two policies, because it's like comparing apples to oranges. You've got the primary policy, which is an apple, trying to make itself into an orange. The orange being the umbrella coverage. So I think the simplest approach is you don't even get to the conflicting language. You merely look at what is the purpose of these two policies. And when you do that analysis, then National Farmers Union umbrella policy has to be last. If you want to use the other approach and compare the two languages, then you can't stop your analysis just with a comparison of the two languages. You have to look at the intent of the parties, the intent of the insurance companies, And what does the market say about coverage? And when you do that, and the majority's analysis, you find that, in fact, this National Farmers Union policy is, in fact, the true umbrella policy. National Farm, now let me just compare the two so I hopefully make this clear. Farm and Cities policy is marketed and sold as a primary policy. It's called a personal auto policy. National Farmers Union's umbrella policy is just that, an umbrella policy. In fact, it talks about itself being a personal umbrella policy.
Does that require the underlying insurance of $500,000?
Yes. That's one of the conditions. If you look at the definitions, not definitions, but it's one of the parts of the policy that talks about the retained limits, and I think it's otherwise in the policy as well, that you have to have the underlying coverage before you would even have the umbrella coverage. In fact, there's a provision in the policy that says if the underlying insurance company is defaults or in bankruptcy or whatever, and there's no coverage under that policy, we're still not obligated until those amounts are paid before the umbrella policy kicks in. And so, again, if you look at the total picture here, not just the language of the policies, but the total picture, you can see that you're talking about apples and oranges. Another distinction is, as I pointed out, is the difference in the premium and the amount of coverage that's afforded. Clearly reflective of a difference in assumption of risk. To collect $211 for $1 million of coverage is clearly indicative of the fact that it's there for the catastrophic loss, which this was. But you shouldn't allow a primary insurance company to fortuitously argue that umbrella policy applies to them. Because if you take away the umbrella policy, who pays? The owner's policy pays first. Farm and City comes in next. No question about it. And their limits would have been exhausted. So are we going to reward Farm and City because Mr. Lorenzen went out and purchased an umbrella policy? And the culpable party, the person who caused the accident, his insurance company walks or pays 4% of the total claim? Is that fair? Is that reasonable? Is that what the majority of courts do? No. Farm and Cities, a third distinction, Farm and Cities policy is only excess in the situation where its insured is driving someone else's car. Again, reflective of the fact that it's a primary policy. National Farmers Union's umbrella policy, on the other hand, is excess in nearly all cases. So if you look and do the analysis that the majority of the courts do, you've got to conclude that this was an umbrella policy. Under American concept, this court has said, if it's an umbrella policy, it's the last tier of coverage. And that's what should have been done in this case. I submit to you that there is simplicity and certainty in the approach that we're suggesting. You don't get into this fight. It is the owner's policy first, the driver's policy next, and then any umbrella coverage is last. And we would submit that is a nice, crisp, clear approach to this issue. If you adopt that, then we would ask that you remand the case back and direct the trial court to enter a judgment in National Farmers Union's favor in the amount of the $50,000 plus the interest that has accrued. Lastly, I want to talk to you about, and quickly, about the prevailing party issue. This court just recently handed down Chrisman versus Dieterman, 2004 SD 103. That came out last month, talked about prevailing party, indicated you don't have to prevail on all issues to be the prevailing party. I would also add and highlight for you the fact that we had to bring the declaratory judgment action to bring them to the table. we did prevail, at least in part. And in addition, we had to go through a lot more process, including motions to compel production of documents, which some courts have indicated is a factor in considering whether or not costs should be awarded. And I would submit to you, I never even got the chance to argue it. I submitted the judgment. The judge said, I'm not going to award costs to either party. Send me a new judgment. So I never even got a chance to even argue the case or argue that point to the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Ms. Neville, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. Counsel. My name is Melissa Neville, and I represent Farm and City, the appellee in this case. The court's now heard about labels, categories, minority rules, majority rules. It's heard about premium rates and public policy, but we haven't heard much about the contract language. Now, Justice Sabers, you mentioned that the contract language shouldn't be the primary factor in this case. In fact, it should be. The decision in this case can begin and end with the contract language. And this court has held, the Eighth Circuit has held, that we only get to those other factors if there happens to be two things. If there's conflict between the two policies, or if there's ambiguity in the contractual language. There isn't either in this case. Farm and City's language says...
Well, there's got to be some conflict in the language, doesn't there? You argued first that your liability should be zero, then you argued it should be pro rata, and of course they're arguing that it should be $50,000. So that kind of implies some ambiguity, doesn't it?
Your Honor, the language that I'm referring to is our policy that says any insurance we provide for a vehicle you do not own shall be excessed over any other collectible insurance. Now, NFU says it's an umbrella. It can't be any other collectible insurance for the purposes of this contract. Their policy then says, has a similar language, and then it says with a caveat, this does not include insurance bought to apply in excess of the retained limit of liability of this policy. Now, NFU makes a very big deal about the American Concept case. That was a case with three insurance companies all fighting over who was going to pay. The first two got it argued out. But then the third policy was the NRA policy that could, under other circumstances, be a primary liability policy. You know, if the insurer didn't have any other insurance in that case, it acted as a primary liability policy. But it had language in there that said, we don't pay until everything else has paid. And this court recognized that the policy that came before it, American Concepts policy, actually had language in it that provided for another policy to come behind it in priority. That's what the NFU's caveat does. Now, if they really intended for this policy to be an umbrella, coverage over any other liability policy in this case, why put that language in there? Why put a provision in there that contemplates another policy coming behind it? No one should feel sorry for NFU in this case. They can change the language of their contract and limit the exposure that they have. Now, the trial court's, NFU says that the trial court's analysis shouldn't have stopped with the construction of the language, that it should have gone on to discuss these other factors. And I've already submitted to you that this court in Ice House Inc. versus Geisler and the Eighth Circuit in Carolina Casualty Insurance Company versus Burbach say, insurance policies are contracts. We follow contract construction rules unless and until you have the conflict between the two policies or you have ambiguity. Our position, Your Honors, is that there is no conflict between these policies if we give effect to that caveat in NFU's provision.
Didn't the trial court find there was conflict?
It did, Your Honor. It actually recognized that both sides have valid points in that the Lamar's case that NFU cites is very similar on the facts and did involve Farm and City. We cited the Unigard case, which had identical facts and went the other way. The court said, I'm not going to make that decision. It looks to me like they conflict, and therefore it's going to be pro rata. The court did not address this caveat in NFU's provision, other insurance provision. if this court takes the position that NFU is asking today, it would be like saying, it would be like telling contracting parties all over South Dakota, we know you drafted something else, we know you agreed to something else, we know you paid for something else, but we think you meant something else, because in all other cases, it's usually this. NFU admits that in under these circumstances, when the insured is driving a vehicle he does not own, then Farm and City's policy is excess. That's the facts before this court. That's the way the decision needs to be made with respect to those facts, and not what might be the case in nearly all other circumstances.
Your opponent says that the Iowa Supreme Court decision in Lamar's is almost on point to where your client argued this same point. Well, how do you distinguish that case?
The Lamar's case, Your Honor, it is very similar, but we would disagree in the fact that we don't believe at this point in time this court needs to make a decision and establish the exception that NFU is asking for. Perhaps South Dakota will go down that road and say at some point in the future, we're in favor of the simplicity rule. Umbrella policies will be forever and always last. But that decision is a policy decision, and it belongs upstairs in the legislature. And at the same time that the legislature is deciding that, it can then also define what might constitute an umbrella, not just by a title that might be on the policy. Because, you know, the first thing that insurance companies will do after a decision like that is to go place an umbrella provision in all of their policies. And instead of the other insurance clause, you'll have a clause that says, in cases where the insured is driving a vehicle he does not own, our policy then becomes an umbrella above all other policies.
But isn't that what you have, your company has done by saying excess, that we are excess, and then that's what you're arguing here?
Absolutely, Your Honor, that is what we're arguing here. Because contracting parties should be allowed to limit the policy in the way that they see fit. And in fact, this court has stated in Fenn versus Progressive Northern Insurance, because the insurance policy is a contract, the parties are bound to its terms, and insurance companies are allowed, subject to statutory constraints, to limit their liability and impose conditions as the, on their obligation to pay. There are no statutory constraints, as Justice Linter mentioned, that prevent Farm and City from putting this exclusion in their policy.
But isn't that what has gotten us here today, is that people, each of the insurance companies have put exclusions in their policies. So then it ends up in the court having to determine, when you've got two conflicting provisions that both say they're excess or whatever, then doesn't the court have to look at the other things, like how much it's cost, and the marketplace, and the how insurance really works in the marketplace? I mean, what's wrong with that?
I agree, Your Honor, that if this court finds there's conflict, we don't agree that there is conflict because of that caveat. But assuming this court does find conflict, then we look to those other provisions. And this court certainly could say, you know, we've decided that it's simpler and it's more sure to just say all umbrellas are forever and always going to pay last. But then what happens? Every policy that comes after that is going to decide, well, we're an umbrella too, and you're still going to have to make that decision based on the contract language. This state has always held that contracts are to be determined first by the four corners of their language. And after that, only then do we look to these other provisions. And if this court's going to make a decision like that, such a decision would be better left to the legislature when they can also define what constitutes an umbrella.
Now you say there's no conflict based on that caveat, and I want to make sure I understand that. Is that the one that you say allows NFU's umbrella allows or contemplates somebody else coming in behind?
That's correct. The provision that says this does not include insurance bought to apply in excess of the retained limit. We heard other issues about the majority and minority rule. The majority rule is the one that NFU purports this court adopt, that umbrellas always pay last. The minority rule isn't the pro rata rule that NFU says it is. The minority rule says we look to the contract. The language of the contract determines how we go. If NFU is asking this court to adopt the position that umbrellas always come last, then it's NFU that's asking this court to write new law. We're just asking this court to apply contract principles. With respect to the policy premiums, NFU makes a very good point in that it says Fredrickson paid only $432 a year for his policy and paid the other guy paid $211 a year for the umbrella. Well, that's the nature of risk. The price of umbrellas will not go up if this court decides today that we're going to base this on the contract principles. But imagine what would happen if the reverse were the case. If this court were today to decide that insurance policies cannot have an exclusion or the exclusion won't be upheld, that can say in the case when you're driving a vehicle you don't own, you're going to pay last. If that exclusion is not upheld, the premium rates for all of those basic policies will certainly go up. Now, the risk that someone might need an extra $1 million worth of insurance is not going to change significantly. The risk, however, if these policies will not be able to exclude when they pay out, will make a big difference.
Is all that in the record, or is that Melissa Neville on insurance?
That's Melissa Neville logic, Your Honor. Policy labels have never been a determining factor, and the fact that NFU says that this court's decision in American Concept decided that, that is simply not true. This court can read the American Concept case. It basically said that under certain circumstances, a personal liability policy can act as excess or umbrella policies. And this court has never elevated form over substance. Titles should not be the determining factor. It should be the language of the contract.
But doesn't the language of the contract at time put form over substance? In other words, his argument is that you look at the reality, you look at the price paid, you look at the risk, you look at those things, and that's substance of what the company is into. But if you just look at what the language the insurance company himself puts on it, whether it's to name something an umbrella or to name something, you know, no risk when you're the driver of somebody else's car, that's really looking at form over substance too, isn't it?
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the language of the contract defines it. It's not form over substance because if NFU really wanted to make sure its policy paid last, after and beyond all other policies, why put this provision in here that says, look, we understand there are going to be possibilities that another policy might come behind us in priority? What's the purpose of that language? Certainly, NFU could draft language that would limit its exposure if indeed that were its concern. It drafted its language the way it did. Its insurance paid for that language and paid for that coverage. Farm and City drafted its policy the way it did. Its insured knew its exposure and paid for that coverage. To now let a third party come in and change the rights of that contract arbitrarily, it's not the way that this court has done business with respect to contracts. It doesn't follow the contract rules with respect to construction. And it certainly doesn't further any public policy. Now, if the NFU really wants to talk about public policy as a rationale to change the rules and to set a new standard, this court has stated in the past that we see no public policy question in how insurance companies divide among themselves the loss occasioned by their communal insured. There isn't a public policy issue to decide here. We look at the language of the contract. If it's a conflict, then look to these other factors to determine which comes out on top. Now, if this court does find the conflict that Justice Meyer Henry mentioned and that the trial court decided was at issue here, then at a minimum, under the rules of Royal Indemnity Company versus Metro Casualty Company of New York, then the two insurance clauses should be mutually repugnant. NFU says this is apples and oranges. It's not. They're both insurance policies. They're both insurance contracts. They both have other insurance clauses that purport to exclude each other. We would ask that this court, if it finds a conflict between the two policies, then affirm the trial court's decision and order that both parties pay on a pro rata basis. Now, the pro rata basis, of course, is the ratio of the individual coverage over the total available coverage. In our case, it was 4.76%, and that was the $11,186 that NFU mentioned. There's another issue before the court with respect to the pro rata payment. If this court reaches the decision that there's conflict between the two policies, therefore they cancel each other out and each pays their pro rata share, then Farm and City would ask that this court also decide the NFU, by paying the entire amount of the settlement on its own, was a volunteer and therefore not entitled to contribution. That is under this court's decision in American Reliable Insurance Company.
Didn't they give you notice all the way along that they're looking to you as soon as they do it?
They did give us notice, Your Honor, and that was...
How can they be a volunteer if they're saying, you know, we're going to assert this claim against you as soon as we take care of our own insured?
Because they had no obligation to pay the entire amount, and they had no obligation to include Farm and City in the release. Certainly, they could have said, all right, we'll settle with you. We'll pay our entire, what we think we owe. We'll leave this $50,000 out, and we'll leave Farm and City out of the release.
Did you ever advise them back when you received when your company received notice that, if you do make a payment, you're going to be a volunteer?
We never advised them that they were a volunteer, but we did advise them that we did not believe we had liability in this case, and if we had any, it would only be on the pro rata basis. But we did not, Your Honor, tell them that they would be a volunteer.
Because then if you had done that, then they could have concluded, well, maybe we'll put the money into escrow or we'll do something else, wouldn't they?
That certainly would have been a possibility. Now, the language in American Reliable doesn't say you're required to give the other party notice that they're going to be a volunteer if they pay this entire thing. But certainly, NFU is a sophisticated insurance company. They know the law as well as we do. Certainly, they know the law as well as we do. They could have protected their interests by not paying that if they really believed that they were not liable for that other $50,000. We have, if you exclude the provision, they cancel each other out, you exclude the other insurance clause, we have a provision that says we pay our pro rata share. That's an independent contract with the insured that will pay our portion of it. So if NSU really believed that we were liable for that portion of it, they did not have to pay the entire settlement and could have left us out of the release to then let the insured come back after us, or the victims come back after us for that $50,000. With 3 minutes remaining, Your Honor, I'd like to briefly address the issue of cost. That issue is discretionary with the trial court. Now, certainly we contended we were the prevailing party in this case, but even if we agree with NFU and say you were the prevailing party, whether the court ordered an award of costs and attorney's fees was up to the discretion of the court. The court in that case found that neither party was innocent, that both parties won on some issues, and therefore no cost would be awarded.
What are we talking about in amount?
A cost and attorney's fee? I have no idea, Your Honor, because the issue never came up and we never argued it. It was never...
But the fact of the matter is, you never tendered the $11,000. You essentially had to be drug into court.
That's correct, Your Honor. But a Farm and City should not be punished for protecting their interests. Why should they pay the $50,000 when they believe, and the court in this case believed, that we were only liable for $11,000? Defendants have never been punished for defending their interests, particularly when, as in this case, those interests were justified. In conclusion, Your Honors, it is not necessary to discuss labels, categories, majority rules, minority rules, any of those factors we have talked about today, unless and until this court would determine that there is conflict between those provisions. Farm and City urges this court to look at that caveat in NFU's policy and hold that there is no conflict. Farm and City came last. If in the event that this court says we don't buy that and we believe there is conflict, then we ask this court to affirm the trial court's decision and order that both parties pay their pro rata share. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noel. Mr. Wise, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I have so much, I don't know where I can start. Let me just talk first about what she said, that Farm and City said that it would only be liable on a pro rata share. If you look at my affidavit, it's in the settled record 81, And I've attached several exhibits to that, and you'll find the letter back from Ken Furman, the local adjuster, at Subtle Record, page 91. In the case of Peel versus Frederickson mediation, if by chance the value of the combined claims through mediation are found to be in excess of $1,500,000 of available coverage, please call Farm and City Insurance Company or Dakota Claims for a request for contribution. They never, ever offered to pay dime one from the get-go. We never, ever got the chance to argue costs and disbursements to the trial court. I submitted the proposed judgment, and Judge Von Wald directed me back after getting objections from Mr. Gosch, and I responded to those objections to delete it. So we don't even know what I'm entitled to. I've got some thoughts as to what I'm entitled to, but it's never been able to be presented to the trial court. The trial court should have at least allowed us to do that, made findings so that this court had something to review, but we never even got that chance.
You could have. How are you entitled to attorney's fees?
I may make that argument.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know that that's here before this court at this time, but certainly they know that that's what's coming.
You could have put an affidavit in as to what your costs were, and so you weren't bound by the fact that the trial court didn't reach that issue.
I suppose that would be true, that you could say that, go through the jump the hoop, even though you know what you're going to get when you jump to the other side. It was clear he was not going to award costs. So why go through the process when you know that it's futile? Let me touch on two other things that the other side said. At some point in the future, we may get to where we are today. The time is now. You've got the case before you. There's no reason why you can't embrace the majority rule. Her other point that I thought was absolutely on point for our side was her comment that premium reflects the nature of the risk. Absolutely, positively, what we've been arguing since we were before Judge Von Wald. You look at the cost, you look at the coverage to determine what is true umbrella coverage. And when you look at the cost of this premium is reflected in the risk, there is no way you can say a $211 premium for $1 million of coverage equates to a policy where you pay $400 for minimum 25-50 coverage. Now, she says, we don't talk about the different categories. That's exactly what you've got to do. You don't operate in a vacuum of just looking at two insurance policies. You have to look at the total picture, which is what the majority of the courts do.
What about the argument, I want to make sure that you hit it before you leave, that there is no conflict because of the one provision that does allow your company to occasionally not be excess? Okay.
Look at paragraph 10 of the in the definitions. It's on page 9 of our appellant's brief, and it talks about retained limit. And in subpart A2, it talks about other insurance available to a covered person is part of that retained limit definition. And then you go down and you read that section, and it says, this does not include insurance brought to apply in excess of the retained limit. The retained limit includes Farm and City's policy. That's the other insurance that's available to the covered person. The covered person in this case was the borrower, Mr. Frederickson. Now, the one point that I was absolutely incredulous about, and is something that we touched on in our brief, is the point made that in cases involving order of applicable insurance coverage is a dispute between insurers. And it may be expeditious for the insurers to pay the claimant in full, preserving good customer relations, and then file a declaratory judgment in court seeking reimbursement from one another. They wanted us to pay the $500,000 and then make these poor people that they're insured injured wait while the two insurance companies fought it out. Now, is that what this court wants us to do? To deny benefits to injured parties while two insurance companies fight it out? Or is the better course the course that that National Farmers Union adopted in this case? Went in and paid, gave notice to them, included them in the release so that they are protected from any claims from those injured people, and then we bring our action. Now, isn't that what we should be doing? Isn't that what's fair? Isn't that what's right? Isn't that what is just? And for them to argue that we would let poor injured people wait, and you know how long it would take because it wouldn't only be at the trial court level, we'd be up here for the compensation that was due them. I'm absolutely, incredibly surprised that Farm and City would take that position. But they have stonewalled us throughout this proceeding. They have thrown impediment after impediment in front of us. I think that the only thing right, and I don't use that as justification, because the majority of the courts do follow what we are asking this court to do, but it certainly would give us some comfort if this court were to, in fact, adopt the majority rule. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. The court will be in recess.